But so who here is using ASP.NET 5 already? Built some apps? Anything? Come on, any hand? Nobody's ever like built an ASP.NET 5 app at all. That's good for me to know. Nobody. Hello world. Okay. Nobody. Yeah. Template. Okay, that's cool. A little bit. Windows, Mac. Windows. Has anyone here played with ASP.NET 5 on Mac at all? Okay, cool. There was already a session earlier today on cross-platform open source ASP.NET 5. Is anyone interested in that, that missed that earlier session? Now, who here saw that earlier session? Okay, I figured a lot of people would. So I'm planning not to cover that, because I figure if you were interested, you would have seen that whole cool session earlier. Who here thinks, who here's kind of worried, like, what are you guys doing? This is crazy. You're building a whole new ASP.NET. No. Yeah? A few people? Okay. I'm a little scared, too. Nah, I'm kidding. What else? Anything that's really interesting you'd like to hear about? Any features?
Yeah. My question is, what is the future of the .NET full framework?
Uh-huh.
That we have a core framework.
Okay.
For me, it's not clear.
Okay, good question. I'll just talk about that now. So his question is, what's the future of the full framework? So I've got a slide here. There's a huge amount of stuff that's running on the full framework, including a lot of stuff that Microsoft ships. A good example is Visual Studio, right? Visual Studio depends on the full .NET framework, WPF, MEF, a lot of other stuff. So this is going nowhere. Like this, meaning this will continue to exist, be supported, get performance enhancements, et cetera, because we need it. Does that seem fair? I mean, so as an example, like, and that's part of why this morning during the keynote I showed web forms. We added HTTP2 support. We added support for like all the features we've added with NPM and Grunt and Gulpenbauer and all that stuff. We added for web forms as well. We things like, there's just continual, like, so if you look, this past week we released .NET 4.6.1 that includes a bunch of stuff and also just like performance and security features. So so sometimes when Microsoft says, oh yeah, it's still gonna be around and we'll support it, they're kind of, yeah, it'll be around, kind of. Yeah. So yeah, and this is an example where like we need it. Like even if we weren't selling it to customers, we badly need .NET to work well, right? So also the whole idea of ASP.NET 5 running on top of the full framework, that is definitely a supported scenario, and that's something we expect a lot of customers will use. So this is kind of the flashy stuff that we'll show at conferences, and you know, it's cool. It's neat to be able to do that. And there's some really good benefits to that because you can say, I'm going to ship my application, you know, and it's going to bring its whole framework with it, and I know it's going to work, and I can throw it on a Docker container, and it's contained, and it's side by side and all that. So that's great, but for a lot of shops, they're going to say, okay, we had ASP.NET 4.x, now we're moving to ASP.NET 5. We're going to keep developing applications, shipping them on Windows and IIS, and they expect this to all work. So, yeah. I mean, I've been wrong about Microsoft before, but I very much expect this to not only be around, but to be heavily supported.
And what's the future of web forms?
The future of web forms is, that's one I have to talk more carefully about. So, a sip of espresso for that one. So, web forms is, and I showed those features, HTTP2 and all that stuff, right? So it's around, however, it's not coming to ASP.NET 5. So if you have existing web forms apps, what we're recommending to people is if they work for you, unless there's a business value to rewriting them, keep them where they are.
What's the alternative for web development?
What we're looking at right now is ASP.NET 5 with something like Angular on the front end, right? So Angular then gives you some of those things like components and, you know, grids and all that kind of stuff. So that's really kind of where we're telling people to move to.
Yeah. What will I be able to do on the green thing and not be on the blue?
Okay, so the idea this diagram is supposed to show is this is the web hosting layer, this is the web application, and this is the framework underneath. So for instance, you're saying, what can I do here that I can't do here? Well, this depends on this, so you can't do anything on this without this, right? But you can do things on .NET Core without ASP.NET 5. So at the Connect event, they just showed off things where you can do .NET command line applications. So similar to where you can do node commands that aren't a web app, it's a node command that says, you know, list all my packages or whatever. So the same kind of thing where you can build small applications, and I expect that that'll get bigger over time. So, but this is the web. So this depends on this, this depends on this, and this depends on this, right? So you can't do anything up here without this. Does that make sense? Maybe I need to work on the diagram some more. I stole it from Scott Hunter and Scott Hanselman. I thought it would work, but. Okay, yeah.
The core libraries are missing a lot of functionality, of course. One of them is image rendering.
Mm-hmm.
Will that be supported?
So the answer to a lot of questions of what's missing in .NET Core, when we can get to it, right? So it's definitely something we know about. I think there's a user voice thing for that with a lot of votes for it. And so it's just a question of time. Right now the team is working like crazy just to get web apps, you know, working. And so there are some things with image rendering that kind of depend on Windows-specific things. However, there's some pretty cool cross-platform image rendering stuff, so that's it will be there, but I don't know how soon, right? And there's a lot of things where they're kind of having to tell people, we want to support this, but we can't get it done just yet. So I should start now. Great questions, and please keep the questions coming. And so now that this has started, we're entering the bonus round. So we've got Raspberry Pi 2 to give out, a backpack, and 3 stickers. Yeoman, Edge, and Git. This is the Git logo, not the GitHub logo. It's important to keep those straight. Okay. So yeah, so here's the general idea. We were just talking about this, so I just kind of want to review it here. The general idea is that, like I talked about in the keynote here, this is the shipping versions. This is what shipped with Visual Studio 2015 in August. So this whole stack, this is out, this is supported. This is the new stuff. It is this. And that is shipped at a release candidate stage. So that means we will support you, but you should expect some breaking changes. Anyone that installed the release candidate probably saw there was already a release candidate update because we messed up a few things. So it's not done, right? We're still working on it. So that's kind of where that's at. And then this is an important thing here that people don't think about a lot is because we always show, you know, this stuff here. We say, wow, look, on a Mac, I just built an ASP.NET app, you know. But this is also good to know, and it's also good to show your boss, maybe, if they're a little scared, is that you can just say, look, it's just ASP.NET, don't worry, nothing. So actually, I thought I would start.
On the Mac?
Yeah, well, yeah, there's that. So let's start by kind of comparing the stacks of what you could only do with ASP.NET 4.6 and what we're moving towards being able to support with ASP.NET 5. So I'll just build all this up. So in the past, looking back, so who used ASP.NET 1.0? Good amount of people. So I did too. I was really excited about it because I was coming over from classic ASP and PHP, and it was really cool to be able to, wow, I've got a whole framework and I don't need to build a COM object to do like really basic stuff, right? So that was really cool. But from the beginning, we assumed you were running on Windows and you were running on IIS, et cetera. We assumed this entire stack. So some things have changed all across the board here. So, you know, now cross-platform, instead of assuming a .NET framework, we've got this DNX, which is .NET cross-platform. As you may have seen at the Connect event, we just announced that this is changing to .NET, D-O-T-N-E-T. So right now we kind of hide that under the covers, but that's something that'll just be built in. Like I'll show you later, you don't have to care about this. So this is all available for you to know. This is really great for people that want to get in and change things and run cross-platform and get it on Docker and do all this crazy stuff. If you're an ASP.NET developer and some of this seems overwhelming, there's a good amount of stuff here that you can kind of ignore, right? Because we've really worked hard to make it so file new project, build an app, deploy to IIS, still should work the way you expect, okay? So here's another interesting thing that is changing is the web server. So we assumed that you were running on IIS before, and now we've got this new thing called Kestrel. So Kestrel is a lightweight HTTP server. And you can really think of it as it's very similar to Node.exe. So the idea is it is an HTTP server. It's very lightweight. It is cross-platform. It is the same thing. So we're building it so that you'll use Kestrel on Windows, Kestrel on Linux, Kestrel on OS X. This is something that's changed over time. Earlier, they had kind of a different hosting model for IIS or for Windows and from Mac and Linux. And what they found over time is that it was too difficult to build two different hosting models and do them quickly and in a quality way. So instead, they're building one hosting model that works cross-platform. So this means that you will have something fronting it, like IIS, using the platform handler pointing to Kestrel. Or if you're on Mac or Linux, like Linux, you'd use Nginx and pointing to Kestrel the same way as a reverse proxy, which you probably saw this morning if you went to the talk there. So, one other thing that's kind of cool here is the whole idea of application frameworks. So that is pulled in via NuGet, and that includes your .NET framework. So what that means is when you bundle up a package or bundle up your web app, it really is self-contained. You can pop it on a USB. Who here has seen Hanselman do this demo 1,000 times, right? So you can package the application, put it on a USB stick, get someone to bring up their Mac out of the crowd, pop it in, run your app, and there's your website, right? So it really is self-contained. Now, that's not just done so that Hanselman can do cool demos on stage, although that is probably part of it. But it's also done so that you are able to deploy multiple different versions so that each web application you deliver has its own .NET framework. We could never do that before because the .NET framework before was huge, hundreds of megabytes, and it included stuff for things that we haven't supported for years. You know, it had all kinds of like passport authentication and WCF and WPF, and it had this whole huge framework, right? So now they've refactored it, so we've only got this small, tight web-serving framework. And so now that's small enough where we can package that up as a NuGet package and it ships with your application. So that's really cool for you to be able to not worry about, okay, I can't deploy this app to this server because we have this old version of .NET there. So who here has ever run into that where you want to use a new version of .NET, but you can't because we've got this old app up there? I ran into that first with .NET 2, and I was so frustrated because there were all these cool new features in .NET 2, and IT was like, oh, little boy, you just don't know. And I had to, like, I just left crying, and that was... So now the idea is really, they don't care and you don't care. You package up your .NET framework, you deploy it with your app, and it all just runs. Okay, and yeah, that's enough on this. So, yeah.
Self-hosting applications.
Uh-huh.
So
the question is self-hosting applications. So as far as like hosting in a service?
Hosting as a service. You don't have IIS, and then you use it like the server and all the stuff. Because you have said this is going to be behind the server.
Yeah.
It will not be a server.
So you can, if you want to, and if you're able to make sure that Kestrel is running, you can host it however you want to. So it is possible to get it running in a service. a Windows service or whatever, daemon. But you're responsible for making sure that if the process crashes, you restart it and all that kind of stuff. You will get much better performance out of it, but you've got to worry about it crashing and that kind of thing. So, we expect that for most web applications, people are going to front it with a web server and reverse proxy.
So. By the way, will there be any limitations on non-Windows environments, Apple and Linux?
So great question. So will there be any limitations on non-Windows platforms? So really the idea is we want this to be completely cross-platform. So in the past, I don't know, we may have been, this really is not like a, hey, it might kind of work, good luck kind of thing. We really are testing it. If you look on the repo, you'll see a lot of, sometimes something will work on Linux before it works on Windows and that kind of thing. So they really are, it's supported and that's the way forward. So one other thing about this is all open source. Sorry, we haven't open source Windows yet, and OS X is not open source, but
yes.
Yeah. But so that is really cool. And so, you know, it's not just it's nice, it's open source. It's really cool to be able to, if I see a problem or if something's working weird, I can go out and log a bug on the repo. Or I can go out to, let's see if the team is busy right now. So let's go GitHub, ASP.NET, right? And so we can go in here and we can say, all right, 23 minutes ago, they updated DNX. Kestrel, that's nice to see, they updated an hour ago. What did they change in it? Okay, so let's look at those commits. Halter always does good stuff. And here's something I'm happy about, and this just makes my point completely. Halter just merged a pull request from Ben Adams. So if anyone's been closely following, who here watches the community stand-up that we do? We do a weekly stand-up. It's pretty fun, I think, so I'm biased. But it's a weekly thing we do. It's Scott Hanselman, myself, and Damian Edwards, who's the ASP.NET PM, and crazy smart. And so we just talk about what's new in ASP.NET for that week or however long. So we've been talking a lot about performance. And this guy, Ben Adams, is just like a performance guru. And he's doing all kinds of crazy stuff. They've bumped up the performance on Kestrel from 100,000 requests per second. Now it's 200. Now it's 700,000 requests per second for plain text. So, and then Halter just merged his pull request in. Right, so it's really open source. It's not open source, okay? So, so there it is. That was my next thing.
John,
yes?
Quick question. Where is HTTP context?
So context itself, you really have to look at, yeah.
The thing is, there are so many repos at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Extractions, dependency injection, whatever. It's very difficult to find HTTP context class, for example.
That's a good question.
See where it is.
Or good point, yeah. So there are some things, I forget the name of it right now, but there's a thing where you can look up a class and it'll tell you which NuGet package it's in.
Something that Steve Cleary built, I think. A web, you can find the NuGet package from
exactly
part of it. But
It is true. It is. That does help. You can also
fragmentation.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to some point, but it makes some things slightly difficult.
It's different. There's good with the bad. One thing that I will say, which is good, is previously ASP.NET had system.web.dll, which was I think at least a megabyte. It was big, right? And it was also they threw everything in there. If you you can decompile it, you can look with IL-Spy or Reflector, and there's just tons of stuff in there, and you go, wow, did anyone ever even use this feature? There's crazy stuff in there. And they tried to refactor it 5 times, and they had some really smart people on the team, and all of them gave up. Because there's circular dependencies, it's just a mess, right? So that's part of why when people say, what about web forms? Web forms is part of that mess, right? And so now, that being said, I have seen some people already start building implementations of web forms running on top of ASP.NET 5. So there's some cool stuff that's possible. But that is part of it, is that this is very it's, I was trying to page down there. But this is, you know, refactored in a way that does break it down. I guess I'm a little bit more like, I'm kind of used to like having gone through this. Usually the ones that are on the front page are the main ones. Another thing that really does help is if you go to docs.asp.net, and then this will link into a lot of those framework features. So, but yeah, it is true. I mean, it's possible we could have like a lookup table or something, or improve the documentation, but I think it's just part of this new world of it's properly factored now. So again, just to drive this one home, I mentioned this morning, but this is the idea here is you really do have options. If you have existing web forms, 4.6, ASP.NET 5, or MVC 5 stuff, that all still works. It's not just kind of works. Like this is, there's tons of stuff at Microsoft running on this. SharePoint, I believe, is always going to be on this. You know, so the idea is this is completely supported and getting new features and being worked on. You can run ASP.NET 5 on the full .NET framework, and while nobody's talking about it, this is probably going to be one of the main use cases. This is something where Windows shops are going to say, we've got .NET framework running on that machine. You know, we're used to testing it, et cetera. So that will work. This is great if you need these features. So some features that are available here, you can do side-by-side versioning. You can do, it's modular, so it can be very tight. Your applications are just using what they need and runs cross-platform. So, okay, so I'm gonna do two demos here. We've got the nothing has changed demo, and we've got the everything has changed. So I think this is really kind of, there's two different ways to look at this. And so I struggle back and forth with how do I demo ASP.NET 5, because from the one point of view, if I create a new application and I'm an application developer, like I don't really care about what's going on under the hood, I'm just building an app, right? A lot of the basic tutorial stuff now works. So if you worked with previous versions before the release candidate, we didn't have some things in the tooling like scaffolding. So it was a little more difficult. But okay, so I'm a app dev, and I go, okay, this is great. It's restoring packages, and there's something yellow there. I'll just wait. Okay, it looks like it's cool now. So I'm now going to create a new model, right? So I'll go in and I'll say, you know, add class. We'll create a person. And we'll give them an ID. And a name. Right, and then I could go in and I could create a controller. So I'll say I'll create an MVC controller, and I would like to use my person class. And we finally don't make you compile before doing that, which is kind of nice. So I'll create a new data context. I'll say add, and it's scaffolding out my controller for me, right? So from the point of view of if you've been doing web forms, well, yeah, this is different, right? But if you've been doing MVC development over the past few years, this is, you know, you're able to do kind of business as usual, okay? So, yeah, some things look a little different in here, but for the most part, I've got, you know, here, oh, this is my context, so yeah, that is gonna look different. Okay, so here's my people controller, right? And so, there's a little bit of stuff that's slightly different. It's got dependency injection wired in a little differently. But for the most part, create, read, update, delete stuff, right? And then my views are still using Razor. Okay, so this is the nothing has changed demo. Because really, from the point of view of if you need to sell it to your boss, if you're a little scared that, oh my gosh, I can't do this, what's gonna happen? Like, it's not so bad, right? So now let's do the everything's changed demo. I want to give some credit to this ASP.NET site. I featured, I do these community spotlight things. And I featured one recently from Sean Wildermuth. He did a full hour webinar. And so he kind of went through this, and this was inspiring for me. He went through some stuff in detail where he kind of built up an app from scratch and kind of explained some things. So if you want to look at it in more detail, you can go exactly where I did, the ASP.NET site. You go to the community spotlight, and then you'll find this. So I want to make sure I'm giving that credit. So here, I'll go in, and I'm going to create now an empty project. All right, so file new. So instead of before, where I went in and selected the web application, I'm going to now select the empty app. Let me check on my time here. So I go until good. All right, so this is, definitely started up quicker because it doesn't do much, right? So this actually has, this is my startup, and it's just writing out hello world. So we're going to localize that a bit, right? And so we'll run that. And hopefully, again, pretty quick because all it's doing is writing out a string, right? So that is very simple hello world, but it's not doing MVC, for instance. I can't add controllers and views to it. So that is something that's a little different, is my configuration thing, for one thing. I don't have global ASAX and a startup CS and all that kind of, or I have startup CS now. And they call this now pay for play. You only pay for what you're using, right? So since this application is not using MVC, it doesn't even have the ability to handle, it doesn't know what MVC is, okay? So let's go in and add some of that in. So if I say app.useMVC, okay? So now I get a red squiggle that says, what is MVC? But fortunately, we know that that's a common thing. So this says add package, right? So now, when I click on that add package, not zoomed, so now it's added that package in. Well, what does that mean? That means it went into my project JSON, which is now, I don't have a CS project file anymore. This is where all my dependencies are at. So now this is where it's going to go in, and it's going to say, here, it added in this line, MVC core. All right? So now, I've started on the process of adding in MVC. However, and I could go in and I could say options, if I want to configure routes, I could say options such that, options. And I could go in and say like use route, right? So I could configure out. Or since we know that, you know, a very common thing is people add in a default route. So we could actually do, let me see, app.use. So this is something we added in. Use MVC with default route. So you don't have to go in and copy that same thing in again. Now here's another new thing. This is configuring my application, but there's actually this the way this is all built up is using this thing called middleware, where you add services, and then you configure the services. So here I've configured it in my application, but the service, I need to add that there too. So I say services.addMVC. And I think I want to do that. Probably should stop debugging. So again, this is saying, okay, I need to add in the MVC, or add it to my package, right? And so this is kind of, now I've added MVC to my application. And then I could go in and I can add in a controller. So, and some of the things as far as like adding in tooling, that can come along with NuGet packages as well, right? So now I could actually have done this by just adding in a class, and then the class could inherit from controller, and away we go. And from this point out, I can add in a view, and I can start building. So the point I wanted to show there is a lot has actually changed under the hood when you start looking deeper. When we just did file new project MVC, happy-go-lucky, we didn't know about what was changed. But if we start digging around a little deeper, Well, I no longer have a CS proj file. I now have a project JSON file. There's some really good things for this. We didn't just change it to a JSON file because that's what all the young kids are using. We did it because it's a lot easier to edit and you can do quite a bit more. Well, it gets in your way a lot less. One reason that it gets in your way less is we no longer track all the files that are in your application. So before, if you added a CS file to the app and a teammate added a CSS file to the app and someone else added a JavaScript file, all of those, you got a merge conflict when you all committed your project files, right? That's a pain. So what we do now instead is, if it's in the folder, it's part of your project. So if we look closer at my, so everything in here, if I add in a CS file, that CS file is part of my application. But here's a new thing additionally. We don't serve everything that's added in your project. So before, the way that all that stuff was handled was using webconfig and saying like, okay, well, we don't want to serve the database and we know about CSHTML, we don't serve that. CS files we don't serve. JavaScript, yeah, that's okay. And so we had to be pretty smart about what gets served and what doesn't. And what happens now is, if you want something to be served, you put it in www.root. So right now, nothing's being served out of here. If I wanted to add in an image to my application and I want people to be able to get to it, that would go in here and I could create a folder, an image folder, and then I could add in my images or JavaScript there. Now another thing is, we actually, you would need to go in and tell it to serve static files. So I'm not going to type it, but it's there. Without that, we don't even serve static files. So you may say, well, that's crazy. But the idea, again, is we want you only to pay for what you're using. So if you are only building an API application, you know, it's a back-end HTTP API, and you're never serving up JavaScript and images, then you shouldn't have to pay for static file serving. Okay. So that's a lot of what you'll see. I want to flip back over to the previous one because I want to show a little bit more about the project system. So that was 32. Okay, so some things that are slightly different here. I mentioned this morning about, you know, Bower and Grunt and Gulp and all that stuff. One bit of feedback that we got as we were working on that was, that is a lot of new stuff. You're already changing a lot of things. Why are you making me Grunt, Gulp, Bower? What is all this stuff, right? So we actually, that stuff is still there, but it's hidden. And so if you want to make use of that, if you know what Bower is and you're happy with Bower, then you can say show all files, and there it is. So there's your Bower. And we actually also include a Bower RC, which says, by default, any packages you add using Bower, put in www.root/lib. If you don't want to clutter up your www.root, then you use a grunt or a gulp task to copy those files around. If you don't know what I'm saying, that's why we hid the Bower JSON file, right? So you don't have to care. It's the files are there. You want to go in. So let's say I'm Joe developer, and I want to start using D3 thing. So I'll go in, I'll say manage Bower packages, and then I'll say browse, and I'll say D3, and I'll say install. If you are used to installing this stuff via NuGet in the past, we'll actually, it'll say, we recommend that you install it via Bower instead, and it'll point you over to that. So that's a new thing that's added in the tooling. Okay, so now it's changed my Bower JSON file, and that, changing the Bower JSON file, has caused, so let's look at Bower JSON, that added in D3, and then because that happened, then, remember we looked at my Bower RC, and that said, copy to www.root/lib, there's D3, okay. And now I'll point out just a thing to be aware of. So here is an example of why sometimes people want to use a grunt or gulp task, because D3, and I'm not picking on D3, every app pretty much does that, but they'll have a contributing markdown file, and they have a license and package JSON and all this stuff, and you really probably just wanted this, right? So that's part of why you may want to move. But it doesn't hurt anything, really. If it's up on the server and you don't care about somebody browsing to contributing.md, then it's not really hurting anything, right? Okay, so that's probably a good amount on the kind of new project system. So we looked at startup JS, or startup CS, not JS yet, I guess. And we looked at project JSON. One other thing I do want to point out with startup CS is that if you want to get a better understanding of how that's all configured, all that middleware stuff, you can file a new project and just take a look at what's in here. And this may look like a good amount of code, but it actually really simplifies things. Because a lot of what's in here is not just what was in your app startup and your global, your global ASAX and all that stuff. A lot of what's moved in here used to be in web config files, because there's configuration stuff in here. So there's, for example, this is our configuration system. So if you want to save things like database settings or whatever, you could put that in app.json, or you could put that in this user secret system, which is right here. So for this is pushing you to use environment variables for when you're developing. So instead of using a file that you put stuff in, you would put this in environment variables. I don't have time to dig into that. If you're curious, talk to me later. But environment variables are a really nice way to securely store things like database settings instead of having them in a file that gets checked in. So again, here's some things like, here's how we're setting up our entity framework. If I want to change that or delete it, I can change or delete it. So this is kind of where everything's set up. Logging, this is where browser links turned on, right? So we say, this code actually makes sense. If you're in development, use browser link, use the developer exception page, and use a database error page. And so then, if something's a little bit weird, if browser link's not firing, I could set a breakpoint here. And I find out, oops, I'm not running in development because my breakpoint isn't, right? So I can go through and debug all this stuff. So that's pretty handy. All right, I'm trying to time things to show off some cool demo stuff. So that's my nothing and everything has changed. Okay, so features. I think we've covered all this. I mostly put this here in case I hadn't talked about something important. We talked about the fast thing. Really, that's like, I want to be clear that we're not like trying to sell like the numbers specifically. I'm really trying to sell that this is important to us and we're working really hard. We don't want ASP.NET to just be kind of fast. We want it to be in the top 10, right? So we're looking at tech and power benchmarks and we're saying, what can we do? C# is a compiled language. Like, it has the capability to be incredibly fast. And so that's what we're gunning for. So if you want to know more about that, you can go to GitHub ASP.NET benchmarks. And this is very regularly updated. So you can see here, we've got 2 days ago some updates. There are pull requests that come in here regularly. And one thing that's cool here is we've actually got some walkthroughs on how to run the benchmarks. You want to see me run some benchmarks for fun? Yeah? OK. So I'm going to start with a benchmark running on, so this is the Web Forms benchmark. So this is the ASP.NET 4.6 benchmark. I got this from going to Tech Empower. So these benchmarks are based on the Tech Empower benchmarks, which is something that was started out. This is not a Microsoft thing at all. This is just you'll see benchmarks here for a lot of Java frameworks, all kinds of, you know, Go and Dart and, you know, all kinds of stuff, right? So if we look for ASP.NET on this list, I'm not going to, it's depressing. So, but, so they have in here, here's a simple benchmark. And so I'm going to run this and let's see what port it runs on. So I'm doing things the very simple way. I'm using AB, which is Apache benchmark. There are some better benchmarking tools out there. The team uses something called WRK, which which doesn't run on Windows, or if it does, it's difficult. So they have a whole lab set up with a 10 gigabit switch and all kinds of stuff, and they have Linux things that are just designed to run tests. So they do take it seriously, right? But for running very simple tests, I can do AB, which is Apache benchmark. And let's see, hopefully my app is running. Okay, so I'm gonna go to the plain text endpoint on this. There are several different tests that are part of the Tech and Power benchmarks. So they have things all the way going down to database queries and, you know, kind of more actual web application things. What the team's decided to do, and they're smarter about this than I am, is start with very simple network level things. How quick can, so the plain text test needs to, you hit an endpoint and it returns hello world. And that's it. And there's limitations on what you can do as far as caching and all that kind of stuff. So let's see if that's running. There it is. So there we go, hello world. So this is an ASP.NET 4.6 app. This is running on port 30761, remember that? Okay. So what I'm gonna do, this is command line to run 100,000 requests with a concurrency of 50. And I need to change that to 30761.
It's on top.
30761. Okay. Yep. Okay, so now, to be fair, this is a lot of requests, and most applications, even very, very high performance applications, are not serving tens of thousands of requests per second, right? Especially if you're doing any kind of caching, et cetera. So, for most applications, this does just fine. But it's still fun to look at the numbers. So, all right, so it's done 80,000, 90,000. What we're gonna look at is requests per second. So there's a lot of different things you could look at. Requests per second there is 3185, okay? So now I'm gonna spin up the Node benchmark. And so Node is at, that was interesting. All right, so let's stop this one. And anyone that's done any benchmarking is like laughing because this is ridiculous. I'm running all these tests on my laptop. I'm using it. So this is just qualitative level of, you know, order of magnitude kind of stuff, right? All right, so let's do open containing folder. And I have, and again, the way I got these was I just went and downloaded the Tech and Power benchmarks repository. So there's that, and I think we want that folder. Okay, so I'll start that in another window. Okay, so now I'll do node. And I think it's app.js. Okay, so now I'm running, and this is the same plain text thing, and this is what the Tech and Power team runs. So I'm not, I didn't write some really lame and, you know, implementation of plain text. Okay, so that's port 8080. So now I'm going to that, and I'm gonna change this from 30761. So let's remember that number is 3185 for ASP.NET. Okay. You think Node will be faster or slower? So it is faster, but to be fair, ASP.NET brings along a lot of other things, right? It has authentication, and it has a lot of security features, and it has all these other things. So the way that Node is faster really in this, a lot of the reason Node's faster is because they have this whole pay-for-play model, and they don't pull in things you're not using. So it is a little faster. It is, so we had 3185. Hmm, 2992. So normally, I think when I run it, it's a little faster. But they're, yeah, exactly. I'll run it again, because why not? Now again, I want these both to be slow, because then I'm going to show this running on ASP.NET 5. And I'm not even running the experimental servers. Those are fun to play with. And seriously, if you're like really into performance testing and stuff like that, it's neat to look at what they're doing in the repos for that. And then I'll have to quickly get through this because I want to show a couple of other neat features just to be aware of. All right, so that was 2992. Okay, so 308, it's kind of a wash, right? 3082. So now let's kill that. Let's kill that, and I'm going to go to this thing.
John, just a quick question.
Yeah.
About serialization, it's much faster on LabNet because along the when you are developing APIs, you are always worried about serialization.
Mm-hmm. So it really depends. Serialization, yeah, so this was 30768. So that's a lot faster, right? So that's 10 times faster. So serialization, yeah, is important. That is definitely the kind of thing that they're looking at is things like header serialization and that kind of thing. And that definitely pulls, that comes into, like for a plain text benchmark, it's less important for some of the other ones, where you're doing a more advanced application. So 30229. So again, I'm not selling you the number 30229. I am selling you the fact that this is something we're taking seriously and working hard on, right? So fun benchmarks on my laptop, but we saw 10 times faster for pretty much all cases. Let's zoom through. So I showed you the project system, showed you the pipeline. There was another session today on web API and MVC. The only thing I want to point out is if you're doing current MVC and web API, they're all different. They're different namespaces. If you build a filter for web API, you can't use it with MVC. There are some neat features in web API that because it's different, but they are different and that gets in the way of some things. So what they're doing now is they're merging that all together. So there's one MVC and a controller can serve up APIs or, MVC controller. So, all right, I want to show a few neat things to be aware of. These are like, I'll spend like 2 minutes on it. So it's 5:10, I'm going to go over like 3 minutes unless they stop me. So tag helpers, the idea with tag helpers is that we don't want you to have to write code like this. Add HTML, label 4, blah, 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 in your H. So your view code, when you start writing all this stuff, doesn't look like HTML anymore. And so you can't use things like the HTML editor. So if I want to my label to contain like a Bootstrap class or something, then I need to go in and say that. Which is, this is weird, but we have to escape class because it's a reserve word in C sharp, and then now this is a big string, and if I make a typo here, Visual Studio can't tell me anything about it because it's just a string, right? We'd like for you to be able to write something that looks more like this. So this is optional, but you can say label ASP4, and then this is evaluated in code, and it's turned into HTML, right? So it gives you the advantages of HTML editor. It's a lot cleaner to look at. It's something that, a front-end dev could work on without being freaked out about worrying, about breaking.
Does IntelliSense suggest the classes?
What's the question?
Does IntelliSense suggest the classes?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So this now can work with the HTML editing features in Visual Studio. So Visual Studio sees this as a label, and it's able to say like, okay, and it'll spell correct, and it'll drop down. If I do call-md, it'll show the different proper values for that. So yeah, so that is a big reason for it. So it turns, view code that looks like that into something that looks like that, okay? Some people don't like this, and so to be clear, this all still works. You can totally use this, but I kind of like this. So, you can use whichever.
Are these tag 6 extensible?
Yes, that's the next. You looked at my slides probably ahead of time. So yeah, you can. You can create your own tag helpers. A good place to look is at the existing tag helpers they've written. So as an example, I don't have time to show it, but here's an example tag helper that, so look at the top there where it says markdown, hello world, and it has some text, that's markdown format. So if I put that in a page, it would render that as HTML. The way I'm doing that is I pulled in a NuGet package that's this markdown parser, and then this is all the code I need to write a markdown helper, right? So, and you can nest them. So I can say, you know, they, for instance, we ship an environment tag helper. So we say environment, you know, if it's production, then ship this minified code. Otherwise, show this debug code. So you're able to do that with tag helpers instead of if statements. So that is cool, cross-platform.
John, just yes. A question. I know it works well on Windows,
mm-hmm.
But if you're trying to install it on Linux,
yeah.
I don't care about the Macs, okay?
Okay. Yeah.
If you install it on Linux, I have instructions here for Debian and Debian-based stuff,
yeah.
But I'm more like a Red Hat-based stuff kind of guy, but there isn't any information on that. Would it work?
Yeah, so, well, like you said, there's a lot of, I mean, there are a lot of different Linuxes, right? So the place that this is going to be published to is git.asp.net. And so right now, because I browse to this on Windows, I get the Windows version. If I click on other downloads, then this is where those will go, right? So there will be specific things that you can download for Linux, and there's also documentation on the ASP.NET site, docs.asp.net, for that. So, and so I've slacked off. Would you like a backpack? You are it? Would you like the Raspberry Pi too?
Oh, yes.
Okay then.
Thank you.
Okay, so yeah, sure. Can let's take a few more questions. Questions? I have a backpack to give away. Who doesn't have a backpack? Anybody? I took questions at the beginning, huh? You used them up.
So you like Portugal?
I did like Portugal. I'm gonna give you a bag for that. I love Portugal. Yes. Thank you for inviting me back. No more questions? Anybody? Yeah? You're just thinking, what can I ask? I want to stay.
How does this relate to the Owen and the Katana?
How does it relate to Owen Katana? That's a great question. So,
before and it's similar to the start.
Yes. Okay. So there is open. So there's this open web interfaces for .NET, which is not a Microsoft specification. This is a community specification. You can click on governance and it'll show. So our first implementation of it was for MVC 5, and that's Katana, right? So there's a history of it, right? There's this open Owen Katana thing, right? What's that?
Is this dead
right now? It's still there, but it's implemented a little differently for ASP.NET 5. And part of that is just kind of from lessons learned, and I don't know all the specifics, I don't remember all the specifics, honestly, but there are some things where we say, like they use, we use an application builder for this instead of using some of the kind of rigid Katana things. What we found is, and this is the team, what the team's found, but that it was easier to implement middleware in a way that kind of works smoothly with this. So there is an Owen, if you look at docs.asp.net and you look at Owen, then there's documentation specifically on using Owen stuff. So, you want a sticker? Sure.
Take the git.
All right. I should probably stop because somebody else has to set up. So, but thank you very much.